Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, September 16th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our brand new, newly redesigned website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at McMurrayHatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is another great Monday, and you know who we have on Mondays. Every single Monday, we have Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. If they don't have it, you don't need it. And we've got a great topic for you today. If you own chickens, this topic should be very important to you because As Peter always says on the show, you need to become a poop inspector. Yes, you do. It can tell you so much about your backyard flock. And today's topic is something that should be familiar to a lot of us chicken keepers: loose droppings, their possible causes, and remedies. So today's going to be a hot show, I guarantee it, both with live listeners and thousands of you that listen to the archive shows every single day. We thank you very much. So let's go ahead and get started with all the shout-outs. All of the homeschoolers out there that tune in every day and incorporate the show with their curriculum, thank you very much. Hope your fall learning is going very, very well. I know that Jen and Caleb are doing their daily homeschool activities and are really enjoying that. Thank you to all the over-the-road truck drivers that listen to this show. Keep the rubber on the road, and we thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you to all of our live listeners that listen to the show and our archive listeners that listen via iTunes.com, Zoom.com, and Podcast.com. We thank you very much for tuning in whenever you can, 24/7. And finally, all of the feed and seed stores across the country that stream this radio show live daily to their customers. We thank you very much for doing so. So I hope you had a great weekend. It is Monday, and let me tell you, I had an absolutely fabulous weekend. It was awesome. It was a family weekend, and boy, did we have fun. Yesterday was probably the big, big day that we had over the weekend with the family. Let me first apologize regarding a scratchy throat. I'm getting over kind of a fall seasonal, I guess it's a cold. Started with a scratchy throat and ended up being in my nose, and now it's in my throat. So anyway, so I apologize for the not-so-clear broadcast today, and it is my fault for having this winter cold. Thought it was allergies, but I think not. So, but man, let me tell you about yesterday. We woke up, me and the family, and we took Caleb down to the dock. We go fishing at least once a day, father and son time. You know what? Got to have that bonding with my boy. But we went down, went fishing for a little bit at the old fishing hole, had a great time. Posted pictures of all the events yesterday on our Facebook page at Chicken Whisperer on Facebook. And had a great time. And then we went right up the road to the playground. Had a fun time at the playground yesterday. He loves several of the pieces of equipment there he likes to ride. So he always loves going to the playground. Heck, he's, a little over two. I guess he's 27, 28 months, but he loves it. And then after that, we went, I'd say, pony ride, but it wasn't a pony. It was a full-size horse, but he did get guided around the barnyard, if you will. And so he had a fabulous time riding horsey, he calls it, and had a great time doing that. And, of course, he was a great, great boy the whole day. And so we went and splurged a little bit on an ice cream. So he deserved it. He was a good boy. But we had fun, family fun yesterday. Took lots of pictures for the memory books, for the photo albums, and, of course, to share on Facebook. So we had a fabulous weekend. And we try to get down to the old fishing hole once a day, either in the morning or in the evening, mostly in the evenings when we get settled down, and try to drown a few worms and catch a few fish. We love doing that father and son time. So I invite you to join us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/ The Chicken Whisperer, and you can follow along with all the pertinent backyard poultry information we post and what happens to be going on in the Chicken Whisperer family world, that is for sure. So, again, great show lined up for you today, really all week. Today, again, we have the chicken doctor, Peter Brown, that'll be here, founder of First State Vet Supply. Great topic. So get those Chicken Whisperer notebooks out. Tomorrow, we've got Purple Lotus Oils is going to be joining us, all about essential oils. It's one of our hot new shows here this season. And the third Tuesday of every month, Tracy comes on with Purple Lotus Oils, and she shares with us all kinds of ways we can use essential oils on our bodies, around our bodies, in the house, outside the house, at school, home from school. I believe last month the topic was all about getting back to school with essential oils. And tomorrow, first aid, using essential oils for first aid is going to be the show for tomorrow. This Wednesday, we've got another great episode of Garden Wise Living with Arlena. That's coming up this Wednesday, the 18th. And then this Thursday, the 19th, another great episode of Poultry Today with Dr. McCray, Dr. Bridget McCray, PhD in poultry scientist. And if you'll give me just a second, I'll try to see what the topic's going to be this Thursday with Dr. McCray. Let's see, that'll be September the 19th. Oh, very interesting. We had this show a while back, and it was awesome, back on June 6th. And we've got another one coming up tomorrow. Poultry Research Translated. And the last time we had this show, it was awesome, back on June 6th. It was a hot show. She went through a lot of studies, dissected them, if you will, giving us the research. And it was very, very interesting, the studies that were done regarding poultry, turkeys, chickens. It was awesome. So tomorrow I'll be really looking for this Thursday, looking forward to that. Poultry Research Translated. If you happen to miss last show with Dr. McRae, it was a super one, real popular, Poultry Genetics and Breeding. And that was 2 weeks ago, Thursday. So all the shows are archived, all 865 of them, for 5 years of broadcasting. So you can go back and listen to those anytime you want. So gotta love it. And so we've got a week full of information for you, a week of great guests this week, starting today with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. And normally I don't go to commercial break this soon, obviously, but I'm going to, so I can go ahead and get a cough drop in, and so I don't annoy you with that. And when we get back, we will may have some chickens in the news, and then we'll bring Peter on. So stay with us. Another great episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks
a job for...
Super Chicken?
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us. Again, I apologize for having a commercial break so soon into the show, but wanted to get a cough drop so y'all wouldn't have to hear me just annoyingly cough. And that just means there'll be less commercial interruptions once we bring on Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. In fact, we don't have too many commercial breaks. So, of course, you know, based on regular FM or AM radio or even television shows, we have far less commercial time than any other radio show or a television show. So we're thankful for that, thankful for our great sponsors. And I hadn't said this in a while, but it just makes sense. I'll go ahead and share it with you that, you know, we talk about our sponsors and how they support this radio show and how it's free for you and the whole nine yards. And so we ask that, you know, it's obvious. What we don't want you to do is go out and buy something that you don't need. We don't want you to go out and buy something that's not a great deal if you're looking for something. But we do ask if it's time to make a purchase for your homestead or your backyard chickens that you do visit our sponsors first when it is time to do so and check out what they have. They may be at a better price. They may have a sale going on. They may actually have what you need where others do not. And by supporting our sponsors, you support this radio show broadcast based on all the great free information you get from our resident experts, if you will. So related to today's show, if you visit firststatevetsupply.com, everything you buy from Peter is going to have specific directions for your need. So it's not like you have to, you know, go somewhere else, buy the product, and then, oh no, I'll just have to call Peter and get directions on how to use it. You know, don't be doing that. Everything you get from firststatevetsupply.com will come with the specific directions you need, how to administer, the amount to administer, how often to administer, the whole nine yards. And that's worth its weight in gold when you're relying on this for the health of your backyard flock. So just keep that in mind. But we do ask that you support our sponsors or give them a try when it's time to buy. So, all righty, we'll head over to the phone lines here. And we'll bring on our good friend, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Let's give him a big Chicken Whisperer welcome. Hey, Peter, welcome back to the show. It's always glad to have you on today.
Hey, Andy, how are you doing?
I'm doing very, very well, and I hope you had a great event last weekend, and everything went well, and it was a success.
I did. We had well, Tammy couldn't go with me because we have an elderly dog here that is in need of care, and so she had to stay home, unfortunately. But as far as the event was, it was a nice affair. Met some people that I had been conversing with for a long time on Facebook and what have you. So it was kind of nice to, you know, see the people that you've been talking to for quite some time and actually see them face-to-face. Always is nice to, you know, to do that. And had pretty decent weather the whole time we were up there. It was up in Bath, New York, which is about, I believe, 20 miles west of Corning, New York, in the lower western southern tier of New York State. The weather was good. It was actually fairly cool the whole time we were there. So a little easier on the birds, a little easier on the humans that have to deal with it as well. So.
All right. Absolutely. We've got there we go. You're coming in loud and clear, by the way, for our listeners. But we've got a couple of questions I want to go to, just maybe two, before we get into our topic. One is kind of related. And let's see if the other one is, I guess they're both kind of related here. So if you don't mind talking about these two questions, and then we'll get on to the topic.
Sure.
Okay, that's super. This comes to us from, let me go ahead and open it up all the way here so I can see the, give you all the information. I haven't read it through, so I'll be maybe stutter here or there. Let's see. They've got a 15-week-old pullet. This comes to us from Cheeky. A 15-week-old pullet they've had since, 9 weeks with her sister. Had 1 week when the pullet started doing intestinal sheds, plural. Did one round of Amprolium
at a half a teaspoon per gallon for 5 days, during which the shedding stopped. Switched to maintenance dose, and 3 days later it started again. This time in the CESA drop. Next day, a little blood. Then day three, another large shed. Something every day forward after that. Did some research on Merrick's. After 3 days on probiotics, Polyvisol and protein, I started another round at 1 tablespoon per gallon. Yesterday was a good day, day three. This morning, another large, bloody shed. She is smaller than the other pullet, but otherwise active, eating and drinking, but does seem to rest more. Talked to others with chicks from the same hatch, and they are all healthy, so is her sister. So it's one hen she's got. Both are getting dosed, of course. These two are still separated by fence from the rest of my flock. Tried to get a fecal float done, but no vet within 100 miles would do one. Can't go to one vet who will send it to the state lab, but fear the girl would be dead by the time I get the results back from the state. That's a lot of information.
And yeah, it is.
A great job, relaying it.
Sure.
But any suggestions for chicken?
Well, I think the first thing you have to look at is the terminology being used, because it's often confusing. I hear this thing about intestinal lining shedding and everything else, and she's using the terminology shed. Either misunderstanding it or because what it leads you to believe that it is a somewhat normal thing for them to shed the intestine. Yeah, just like we shed our skin from the outside. As you scratch, the skin flakes off and everything else, but you don't get any blood with it. Generally speaking, in a intestinal shedding situation, it really goes for the most part unnoticed. When you start seeing blood with it, that therein lies a problem, and I think that is the tip-off in this situation. The fact that it doesn't seem to be controllable with the Ampryl or Corid leads me to believe that it either needs to be treated for a longer period of time with those products, or you need to switch off to something else because it doesn't seem to be able to be knocked down and kept at bay with a maintenance dose. So you may have to go with a larger dose of the Ampryl Corid. I would suggest, if it's the liquid, 10 cc's, which would be 2 teaspoons roughly, in a gallon of water, and run it out for 7 days, and make sure that the bird is consuming a reasonable amount of water so that it gets a reasonable amount of the medication to try to stop this thing and get it under control. Probably, if the bird were mine, I would probably do this. I would probably switch off to sulfadimethoxine for 5, no more than 6 days in the drinking water. And what that allows you to do is have a greater degree of hopefully control over this thing, from the standpoint that while you can't come back again right behind that, with another sulfa drug. So you treat for 5 to 6 days with the sulfadimethoxine, everything gets good in a week or 10 days, all goes backwards again and you start seeing blood again. You can then come back with a higher dose of the Ampryl Corid, but you can't come back right away with the sulfadimethoxine. It's not healthy to do that. But you should get a better handle on it by doing that. As a matter of fact, over time, as I see things and I see what works, what doesn't work, and this kind of stuff, you have to kind of a little bit be more innovative, because in my position, I don't see, people do all kinds of different things, and there's nobody out there that basically that's going to come back and say, do this, that, or the other thing. It's going to be innuendo and that kind of thing. So when we get a case where we have trouble controlling the coccidiosis or an enteritis or something like that, A newer method now is to come back with Albon tablets and give one in the morning, one at night, and Ampril in between, because you can give the Ampril, you know, basically it's not going to hurt the bird in any way, shape, or form. It's only going to tie up the thymen for the period of time that you're giving it, and in 24 hours it's going to go back to releasing its hold on the thymen anyway. So it's not going to be a long-term effect there. So it's a little bit more of a different way of doing it. As a matter of fact, I just got a bunch of Albon tablets in because you have to use a specific size and so on. But so the sulfadimethoxine and Albon are the same thing. The one I'm talking about is a tablet versus the liquid. But in this particular case, I would come in with the liquid and I would put that in the drinking water, run it out about 6 days, and then back away and see where it goes from there. It's much more broad spectrum. If you've got something else going on that's helping to drive the coccidia, another bacterial infection going on at the same time, that will take care of it more than likely, whereas the Ampril specific to coccidiosis only. So that's what I would do in this particular case. Come back with the sulfadimethoxine, and then use your Ampril to keep it at bay till, you know, in case you have to come back and do it again. Keep the bedding relatively dry. I'm not sure that I would probably clean it out at this point. I might consider doing that and give it a change and see if we can get away from the bedding that is contaminated with the oocysts that are causing this, which is one of the more virulent strains of coccidia, because we're seeing this intestinal sloughing of blood and so on. So that's the route I would take with this at this point in time.
Okay, that's great information. And she is in the chat room, so I'm sure she took tons and tons of notes with that. And
yeah, we've seen it before, Andy. We see this from time to time where somebody will get a bird that, you know, just has a nasty strain of this stuff, and it keeps coming back and nickel-diming you to death. And if you don't stay on top of it, certainly, you know, as she alluded to, that the bird would be dead. Now, on the flip side, it just amazes me that you can't get a dog and cat vet to do a simple fecal flow. That's the same process, read basically the same way, and inexpensive. They don't actually have to see the bird. All they need is a clean dropping that's free of bedding and dirt and that kind of stuff. So I don't get it, but it's not hard for them to do. But some of them just don't want to be bothered, I guess. I don't know. You know, and I've run into this before, years past, asking a vet to do something with some goats that I had at one time, and you know, the secretary wrote, we don't see them. I said, well, you know, he has a vet license, so he should be able to see any animal. He should be able to pick and choose. And so I have a tendency to stick it right back in the nose when they tell me that kind of stuff. So even though it doesn't get you anywhere, I just like to let them know that, you know, they take an oath to take care of animals, period. It doesn't matter whether it's a dog or a cat. That's just the side of the business that they choose to do. But ethically, they should be bound to do it all. But that's the new world we live in these days. So
yeah, no kidding. That makes sense. Erica has one. You know, she's going to be looking. She may be listening right now. Erica posted, I have a cockerel with loose droppings who also lays down more than his remaining two flock mates. There's key there. Merrick has hit us hard. We have lost 6 of our original 9. I assume that the cockerel is showing symptoms. Looking forward to the show today to see if there's anything I can do to improve his chances. So,
Well, the opening statement that I would make, in our topic today was the fact that, you know, you have to look at several different diseases anyway. We generally wouldn't look at Merrick's unless, causing the wet droppings, unless we started to see, you know, the other symptoms that generally go along with Merrick's. But by the same token, you could have a bird with lymphoid leucosis, which is a different, it's not actually a Merrick's virus, it's a leucosis virus, and it's in a leucosis sarcoma complex. It causes the liver basically to grow out of control, and we do eventually see wet, watery droppings with that as well. But it's not the primary thing that we generally would see with a bird with with Merrick's. Generally with Merrick's, they go down in the legs, as we all know, and the classic stance that they take, both legs forward, one leg forward, one leg back, laying on the side of the breast with both legs out, or any combination, wherever the legs end up, kind of, is how it works. But generally, for whatever the reason, they end up in that particular position, and you can get, a watery dropping from that. And again, that lots of times that's caused by the fact that they're not eating maybe as much as they're drinking. Whichever they can get to first is what they're going to take. So if they're hung up by the water and that kind of thing. Another tip off with Merrick's is they're scooting around on the wings, using the wings to push themselves around and what have you. So you see the tips of the wing feathers pretty well beat up. But yeah, in that particular instance, I would, because of the history of the farm there, you have to consider that as well. She's probably looking at that. Now, I don't know whether they have vaccinated or not. That's the approach I would take. It's the only thing that will stop it. Otherwise, this will go on and on and on. Everything you bring on the place that doesn't have any great degree of natural resistance will end up being a dead bird eventually. But as we work our way through the topic today, I don't know if you have any other questions. We can,
Nope, that's it. Let's roll with it. Perfect timing.
All right. Well, certainly diseases of many, many different descriptions will take place with these birds that can bring on wet droppings. And, they're anything from worms, whether they be roundworms, capillary worms, tapeworms, anything that's going to upset the balance of the microbiota. We've talked about this before when we talked about probiotics and gut health and all of that kind of stuff. Anything that upsets the intestinal flora, so to speak, starts to lend itself to having more problems associated with loose droppings, wet droppings, and we'll go into later some of the places in the intestine that could be affected by these things, so that you might make a little bit better, more informed decision, or at least understand where one or the other is coming from. And none of it's cut and dried, okay? I don't want people to think that they're going to listen to the show today and think that every time they see a particular dropping that I'm talking about, that's what the problem is. This is kind of like being a detective and looking at things and looking at what works, what doesn't work, farm history, seen this before, what you did for it before, did it work, didn't it work, all those kind of things come into play. If you have a really, really healthy flock and you generally don't have this problem, then you have to look at some of the things that might be affecting it, okay? But certainly diseases, so worms in many cases will cause, wet droppings, but in many cases too, as I said on the show many, many times before, becoming a poop inspector is certainly going to be to your advantage in looking for problems in the droppings. We can generally look at coccidiosis. We can look at worms, tapeworms, and roundworms predominantly are the ones that you're going to find in the droppings. And generally, along with those, we do see some water associated with the dropping itself. Coccidiosis changes the composition of the dropping. May not be as watery, but can be bloody, cannot be bloody, can have more water to it. So there are a whole lot of things. Enteritis is usually a bacterial infection, could also be viral. Some of the reoviruses that are out there, they're not as common in backyard chickens, so I wouldn't look to them as my first thing. The bacterial part is more common, so I'd be looking for more, or at least be thinking about the bacterial problem being part of the issue, and see based on the droppings and history of the farm, overall health of the birds, just where we stand on that, and try to make some sort of an informed decision. And when you make a decision and go with it, we'll talk about possible remedies later on as we go with that. One of the other things that I think is probably missed by more people than not, and we did a show on it, can't remember when, but we did do a show on it maybe a year or so ago, I don't know, but mycotoxins, these are your funguses and molds and stuff that end up on naturally occurring on corn and other feedstuffs, and very tightly controlled for the most part by the Feed and Grain Inspection Service, FGIS, Federal Grain Inspection Service, and it's their job, to make sure that the guidelines for these are enforced. That's why when you go to a feed mill, they take samples of the corn and the soybeans and that kind of stuff, and then they run it under a black light and stuff in the office. They might be doing something more sophisticated today. But at any rate, what they're looking for is these mycotoxins that are on the feed, and they're allowed to be there because they are naturally occurring, but they're not allowed to be there in mass. So we look for these things lots of times in wet seasons in different areas of the country that may have had a lot of rainfall. We can see these things crop up more on the crops and how corn and so on and feedstuffs are stored. If they're not dried down properly to the proper moisture level, and they're too moist when they're put into the bins, and or they're not moved around. People probably don't realize that, but you can have 1,000 bushels of corn sitting in a bin, and if you don't move it around, rotate that corn around, it'll actually start to heat up and mold and what have you. In some cases, can even start a fire. So they move that corn around from one bin to another on occasion, and not sure what the rotational date time is on it, but I'm sure it's not very long. But and that's all an attempt to keep the stuff from going bad, going moldy, getting old, and all that kind of stuff. At least a good feed mill does that, and they have the conveyors and stuff and augers to move it. But so mycotoxins certainly can be a big problem. They not only cause problems with the droppings, but they can cause liver problems, which are irreversible. Sometimes you can see lesions in the mouth and so on. And then there are a multitude of different mycotoxins, aflatoxin being the most common, being the most aggressive one that we want to be careful of. Aflatoxin is the most potent naturally occurring carcinogen known to man. And I said, with that, I say naturally occurring. So we've had many discussions on the show about natural stuff and how it won't hurt you, but too much of that on your corn, and it can cause you problems health-wise as well. It doesn't have to be GMO corn. This has been going on since time immemorial, so this is not a man-made problem. This is just a weather problem, and it's natural. It's in the environment. We were talking the other day on Facebook about favus, and you know where does it come from? Well, basically, it's in the environment. If the temperature is right and moisture level is right, these funguses sporulate, and the spores get blown around and get picked up, and that kind of thing. And you never know where they are. I was reading an article, I think somebody on Facebook alluded to it too, but I had known about it before, where there's a new fungal disease out in the state of Washington and what have you, and it's claimed a few lives already, and it's not native to the area, but it is now. Going to be more native to the area, but something to watch, like everything else. And I don't know. Maybe one day we'll all be walking around with masks on. I don't know, but these things do happen, and they happen to chickens just as well. And some of these mycotoxins, cattle don't like it. It's not good for them either. Pigs, especially, sensitive to some of these toxins. Aflatoxin is another one. Zero Leone, several others that are associated with this. Bad feed, moldy feed, rancid fats in feeds, and these kinds of things can all lead to loose droppings of all kinds of different descriptions, besides other problems internally as well. So when we start talking about loose droppings and diarrhea, we kind of have to separate it out into two areas, at least. When you look at a dropping, you have to look and see what you're seeing. Is the preponderance of it water, and is it relatively clear, or is the preponderance of it watery but more white and filled with urates? And that can tell you, not 100%, but it can put you on the track to looking at different systems within the bird's body. For instance, things that are kidney associated, breakdown in the kidneys, maybe some person got too much sulfa drug by chance, an infectious bronchitis wave came through and messed up the birds, and you didn't think much of it, but it's harmed the kidneys, which it can do, causing nephritis, and which would cause more urates to be constantly be put into the dropping. So you need to try to act as a detective here and look at that dropping that is loose and not well formed. It may have some dark fecal material in it, but it may have a lot of water, and it may have a lot of urates on top of that water, which would indicate that it probably is a kidney-related problem. Doesn't mean it's 100% kidney. You could still have other issues going on in the gut, but you need to look at it in that fashion and then try to figure out a game plan to try to fix that. And again, it could be caused by any number of things, okay? A change in the diet, the change in the type of feed that you feed, the coarseness of the feed. When you start feeding different things, this is why I go back to saying if you feed the same feed day in and day out from the same supplier and you don't change a whole lot and you don't add a lot of different things to the feed and all these other things, it makes a big difference on the overall gut health, because something you're putting in there, let's just for argument's sake, my favorite pastime, scratch. A nice treat maybe for them because they'll home in on certain things and they like it, but not necessarily going to be good for them overall because they will home in on it and wait for it. I've seen it time in and time out. There's just too many times now. A little tiny bit given now and then, not going to be harmful, but this thing of leaving a bucket full of scratch out for the birds to play in because you think it's cool, generally at the end of the day is not. And so you need to be careful of what you do with what you feed, because you upset that microbial balance. And when you upset that microbial balance, guess what? You start having problems that are associated with wet droppings. You wouldn't think so, but it is true, and it happens all the time. The birds are no different than humans. They are what they eat. And so if you want nice, firm, good, healthy-looking droppings that have a nice urate cap on the top of them, then you need to be more consistent in what you feed. If your birds are free-ranging, walk around once in a while out there wherever they're at and see what they're eating. We've talked about this before, how they come out of the coop in the morning and they kind of look around and they eat some of their regular feed, drink some water, and then they go off. And some go in little groups, others go by themselves, and they just kind of wander away. After a short period of time, there'll hardly be any birds standing around you. They're generally gone out and going and doing what they were doing yesterday. And it wouldn't hurt to go and look and see. If they're eating an old, rotten, dead carcass that you didn't know about from somebody shot a deer, or a deer died on your property and they're all down there eating it and everything else, probably not a good idea. But so all of these things go into problems associated with loose droppings, wet droppings, caused by any number of things, and that's where you come in as being the detective. What were you feeding? What were they eating? What's their water like? You wouldn't think it, but water alone, if your water is crappy where you live, you're probably going to be contributing to their poor droppings. High iron content will predispose the birds to a possible E. coli infection. So that's another thing you have to look at. How much iron is in your water? If you've got a real high iron content, you might want to consider doing something about it. If you've got a high salt level in your water, you might certainly want to do something about that, because salt and birds don't get along, and it causes a congestive heart failure, or what we call ascites, which is the old disease of water belly. And it seems to be becoming more and more common. I would say that I probably deal with two or three cases of that every couple of months for whatever reason. Sometimes you find it in your young meat birds because they're so fast growing that the heart and stuff doesn't keep up with the rest of the body. So you're asking the heart to pump a lot more blood than it normally would pump, and you start having these problems. It's a venous pressure differential where the amber-colored fluid from the veins leaks into the body cavity. Then it's not. If a little bit goes in, it's no big deal. The body reabsorbs it. But if it's a real bad problem, the body cavity could fill up with water. I have seen as much as, personally, as much as 16 ounces of water taken out of the body cavity of a bird. And it's no different than congestive heart failure in humans, same thing. It's a person filling up with liquid and water and what have you and can't breathe, same thing. So, and you'll know it. They have their belly is tight, very taut, and they have a tendency to start to breathe hard and don't move around quite as much. They become a little bit, their legs will push out a little bit because as the belly fills up with water, it pushes their legs out to the side, maybe waddle like a duck, maybe start to walk a little bit more upright. Any of those things can lead to that particular situation. So salt can do that. Salt can do that. And again, it changes that pH of the blood. It changes everything in the bird's body, and everything starts to go downhill from there. You start to see more watery droppings, even magnesium, high levels of magnesium in the water. So, you know, if you're having problems and they're constant and it can't be remedied by most of the normal methodologies that we would use, then I would consider maybe taking a sample of my water down to my local ag extension agent and ask them if they can test it. If they can't, they probably can tell you someplace that can do it. Maybe most health departments could probably do it. Don't necessarily have to tell them why you're doing it. Just bring it down there. Some places will do it for nothing, some won't. But I would definitely do that. To see where you are, because it's a process of elimination at the end of the day. Many times we just jump right into antibiotics. I don't necessarily like to do that, but sometimes it's required. Things depend, too, whether you've got one bird with a diarrhea problem or you've got everybody. If you got everybody, then it's either, more related to something they ate collectively or something that's running through the flock and is affecting everybody. Versus having one bird with it, where one bird might have got something that they thought was a goodie and turned out not to be so. So something else that can cause birds to have loose droppings, most people should have seen this summer, and that's the high ambient temperatures outside. Anytime the temperature gets to be real high outside with some high humidity, birds start drinking a lot more water, and therefore the water's got to come out somewhere, and the intestine is not capable of absorbing all of that water, and therefore it comes out in the droppings, and that would be considered normal and not an actual disease problem. Okay, so you have to kind of, again, be the inspector here and try to make an informed decision to try to decide, what's causing the problem. So you would see that more so in a condition where the temperatures were high outside, birds consuming a lot of water. And we're not necessarily out of the woods with some of the high temperatures. We had last week, I think we had a couple of days here, we were close to 90 degrees outside. So I'll just throw it back out there again. We did a whole show on how to keep your birds cool and comfortable as possible during the hot weather. And also remember, as the temperature of the air increases outside and the temperature of the water increases, as the temperature approaches 80 degrees and above, they will drink less and less water. And as it reaches closer to their body temperature, they will stop drinking it. They will not drink hot water as a general rule. So just keep that all in mind as we move along here and start working on getting into some cooler weather.
Okay.
So, salt, iron, magnesium, sulfates in the water, nitrates in the water, all of these things. And, when we did some analysis of vitamins, we talked about the roadblock. You get the same thing with the minerals in the drinking water. One of them by themselves in a little bit of excess might not be such a hot deal, but it's worse when it's compounded with another one that's over the limit as well. And some of those will be your sulfates, your nitrates, your magnesium, your salt, all of these things. So it's worth taking a look at, and it's worth finding out what's in your water and go with it from there. I've had to give you an example before. I said take a look where the birds are going and what they're eating. And years ago, unbeknownst to a person, they had a sewage problem, and the birds were going out there and drinking the water around the edges of the sewage and everything else, and they were getting sicker than the dog, and couldn't figure it out. And we went through all the standard questions, what are they eating? Well, would they eat feed, and they give them a little bit of scratch, but that's about it. But they were free-ranging, God only knows. And then when they finally found out that they had a sewage problem, they would put that problem to rest after that was fixed. But it does happen, is my point. And, you don't want to be chasing your tail. You want to get the problem fixed and go on. Let me just throw this out there. Birds that are in a diuresis situation, which is a excretion of excessive amounts of water, if it goes on long enough and you start seeing these fluorescent green droppings along with inappetence and they start to stop eating or they're not eating a lot, that's a real indication that the bird is on thin ice, okay? Very, very thin ice there. So you want to make sure you get a bird in that particular situation. You want to make sure that you're at least putting some vitamins, electrolytes in the water and encouraging the bird to eat and get this problem remedied very quickly. Generally, if they really turn that real bright fluorescent green 24 to 36 hours, then you can experience mortality. So just keep that in mind as we move along through this thing. Sometimes these problems that are associated with inappetence and not wanting to eat, along with diarrhea, very loose dropping, not much for urates, that kind of thing. Usually it's a bacterial problem and can generally be solved by putting an antibiotic either in the water or, in the case of a single bird that was in this particular situation, I would look at giving something down the throat orally, along the tetracycline groups usually works, doxycycline or something like that. Usually will take care of it. But the other thing we talked about a little bit here, I mentioned viruses, infectious bronchitis, or IB as it's known with a lot of people for short, does and will cause nephritis and kidney damage. And then you start to see more urates and stuff in the water than you would see, in the dropping rather than you would see normally. And you would see a dropping that's not well formed. There'd be more water as well. It can affect other parts of the intestine as well. So when we look at this situation of diarrhea, we basically, again, in the beginning I said two parts, so the excessive water and then the excessive amount of urates, trying to drive a dividing line down the middle and try to decide where it's coming from, what system is affecting it. I said before on this show, too, when you start looking at things, when you look at a bird that's got some issues, whatever they be, you start eliminating the systems, okay? So if a bird has got some sort of gut issue, you're certainly not going to bother to look at the feathers right at the moment. You may want to come back later and do that if you notice something that isn't right, but that's not contributing to the problem. If the bird's got a snotty nose, not really going to care today too much about the feathers and whether the bird may or may not have mites. We would probably try to mitigate it all at the same time, but that's not the underlying factor. We have to look and see, so we start, the bird isn't crippled, so we can start to take away and go with anything that deals with the nervous system and that kind of stuff, they're not shaking and all this other stuff. So it really looks to me then, when you start looking at it, you start looking, okay, it's basically a respiratory issue, so let's pick a respiratory medication or whatever that'll take care of the situation, get it under control, and then while you're in the process of doing that, if there were mites or any other external thing that you noticed or whatever, you'd certainly go back and take care of those things as the bird regained its health. So it's really a process of elimination. That's really what I'm trying to bring to the forefront here, because I get a lot of questions about loose droppings, watery droppings, where do they come from, how to fix it. Some days it's easy, some days it's not. And trying to hit it without some sort of laboratory diagnosis, which isn't going to happen. I was talking to a veterinary friend the other day about it, and we were talking about different things, and I said, the problem out there is that from the government right on down, there is no help for somebody who has a particular problem as a general rule. There's a few states that do a good job, the rest of them don't. And if you want to take a bird to a laboratory in some of the states, it's probably more cost prohibitive than the entire flock of birds you have. And I don't see that as being very productive if the goal of the government is to help keep, you know, poultry diseases and things in check. I see it as being counterproductive. And certainly telling you to put your whole flock down is just asinine. That's just crazy. Just something I wouldn't even consider. Unless it was something that couldn't be cured or something like that, then you have to take a look at it. But that would be certainly the exception to the rule. But so on the other side of it, you know, where do these wet droppings come from? Let's assume that you have a dropping that has a small amount of urates in it, okay, but a large pool of water, and then inside of that large pool of water, some actual fecal material. It can be any color, green, light green, almost black, brown, whatever. And so we would look at that, and we would try to make some assumptions. And again, you know, it's how well you can make that assumption. But looking at it, I would have to say that it's probably coming from the gut itself rather than the kidney area. Okay? Could be wrong, but you still got to look at it in that fashion. So then we have to decide how we're going to take a look at this thing. We're going to go back and look at everything quickly. We're not going to spend a lot of time doing it. We're going to run through our head as the flock owner, you know, where they've been, what have they been eating, did I change the feed? And that's another thing, changing feed. I want to talk about that real quick. When you change feed, you're going to end up changing that gut microbiota. You're going to start changing things in the gut. And you may have some birds that are going to give you some sloppy droppings and stuff till they get used to it. If it continues on, then there's a problem that somewhere along the line, whether it's the feed or not, at the end of the day, is going to be a tough one to assess. But at any rate, you run through these things. You might even write them down on a piece of paper so that you can take a look at it. This is what happened. This is what happened. We had a lot of rain. There's a lot of puddles on my farm. They won't drink the regular water. They're drinking out of the puddle. Well, that tells you something. Could be possibly picking up something from the puddle. Because guess what? If your birds are drinking out of it, I guarantee you the squirrels are doing it. The free-flying birds are doing it. The raccoon is doing it. And guess what? They're probably even pooping in it and peeing in it and every other damn thing. So, you know, and your bird's over there just thinking, you know, they just, you know, the fresh water that you've just given them, they're over there drinking it, you know, wholesale. So, some of those things you need to take a look at. And, if you've got a lot of places on your farm and it's feasible for you to do so and you've got a lot of standing water after rain, maybe it's time to fill in some of those holes and take care of it. Not only that, it'll help keep your mosquito population down because that's where they're going to breed. They're not going to generally breed in your bird bath unless it's been sitting there for a month full of murky water. Okay? And they're not going to breed, as a general rule, in your waterers for your chickens. Because if you're changing it every 24 to 48 hours, that isn't the kind of water that mosquitoes settle down into as a general rule. So all of those things, you know, need to be looked at and taken into consideration and try to make a decision as to where these problems are coming from and then try to remedy it from there. Now, Andy, I don't know about your clock, but mine says 1 o'clock. If you want to take your commercial break and we can
keep going. I had to take an extra break earlier in the show because I had to pop a cough drop. So, we're good to go on the commercials.
Okay. Then, so let's take a look now. We've got this dropping, small amount of urates, some whole fecal matter of varying colors, and we have this big pool of water. Fairly large pool of water, maybe 2 or 3 inches in diameter. And so we're going to try to decide now where that's coming from. So from my perspective, I'm going to rule out the kidneys for the moment. You don't rule anything out 100% because you don't know. But you're going to rule out the kidneys right to this moment. You're going to say, okay, it's probably not bronchitis. We didn't see any birds sick. We didn't see any weepy eyes. We didn't see any runny nose. You had no cough and sneeze and all of those stuff. So we start the process of elimination. It didn't happen there. But more so, if you understand where how the bird's digestive system works, okay, it's very unique. It's easy to think that food moves from the crop, well, basically from the mouth to the crop, to the proventriculus. A lot of people leave out the proventriculus. Proventriculus is actually the true glandular stomach, and that's where true digestion starts, okay? Moves to the gizzard from there, and then on out into the small intestine, and then out into the to the cica and the large intestine. But feed actually will move basically with reverse peristalsis back and forth. Food may need to be reground, and it will go back to the gizzard and be reground. It'll come out of the cica and go back and go into the large intestine, come back to the cica and go back out. One of the tip-offs to the health of a flock, the more cecal tonsil droppings you see, okay, and I'll qualify that in a minute too, the more cecal tonsil droppings that you see is a good indication of just how healthy that system is. Depending on what a bird's eating, we always talk about, you know, cecal tonsil droppings a couple times a day. Well, it can be more than a couple times a day. If a bird is eating a really coarse diet, you may not see those droppings as often, because it's going to take a longer period of time for the food to be processed and fermented, and that's what happens in the cecal tonsils. That's why it stinks so bad when it comes out, and that's one of the ways you tell the difference, okay? The color, mustardy color, sometimes frothy to a brown color, generally is a cecal tonsil dropping, and you generally know it because it stinks worse than the regular dropping does. But the more you see of them indicates that the food is going through all the processes that it needs to do. It goes through the proventriculus, it goes through the gizzard, it makes its way through the cecal tonsils and back out into the large intestine, the small intestine, and down into the large intestine and out the cloaca, out the back end. And so when some of this stuff doesn't happen, or again, we come to this roadblock that we talk about with vitamins, I like to use that because I think it's visual and you can understand a four-way stop sign and everybody's waiting on everybody else while everything else in the middle is going to hell in a handbasket, see? And So you've got this food that's supposed to move out of the cecal tonsil, but it's not moving because it's taking longer to digest. And there's different vitamins that are taken up there. There's, where a lot of your B vitamins are taken up, and so on. In your small intestine, you've got most of your fats and stuff like that being broken down and taken care of there. But the amount of times a day that you'll see a cecal tonsil dropping, and I know it's hard to, you know, this is, goes back to my game plan of being a poop inspector. But it really makes a huge, huge difference. Now, in the small intestine, we don't always have a lot of water being absorbed there. Okay, again, this is an area where the pancreas is going to dump some bile in, and it's going to interact with the feed and help extract the vitamins that are fat soluble, which we've talked about before, the A, D, and K. And going to move on then to the cica, come out of the cica and go into the large intestine. In the cecal tonsil, a lot of things can be going on. You can have cecal tonsil worms, you can have cecal coccidiosis, okay, which are all going to add to whether or not it's or impair its ability to absorb water, because that's one of the places where water absorption is taking place. There's some that happens in the small intestine, but the majority of it is going to happen in the cecal tonsil and the large intestine. The large intestine is the last place. It's called the large intestine the way I was taught, because it's wider, not necessarily longer. The small intestine is actually longer in length, but much more narrow in diameter. And that's where all of the, I won't say all of, but a great degree of the drying of the dropping is going to take place. The more water absorption going to take place there. It's similar to, but not the same as, it's often called the colon in chickens because of the fact in humans, the colon is where absorption takes place in a human, the majority of it. Same thing here. Before the fecal matter is passed out, it is this moisture is absorbed from the large intestine. In the large intestine, there's a different species of coccidia that settle down there and cause problems as well. So you could have worms, you could have coccidiosis, you could have enteritis caused by bacteria, you could have a virus, you could have all of these things. And I'm not saying that you can tell whether there was a problem in the cecum or a problem in the large intestine, but I'm going to guess from my experience over the years that because of the large pool of water, that the problem lies from the cloaca to the beginning of the cecum, because that's, if you backtrack and look, you have the vent, which is the opening, the cloaca, which is the chamber, and then you have the large intestine going back to the beginning of the opening to the cecal tonsils, and beyond that, the large intestine going up to the gizzard and the pancreas and stuff in between it. And so my guess is going to be that our problem lies down in that lower end. And this area of the large intestine has the greatest degree of microbiota in it. And so when things happen either upstream from it, meaning up at the large intestine, the cecal tonsil, and so on, and it rolls downhill and it ends up in that large intestine and starts the disruption of that intestinal gut flora, therein lies a problem. And it might be coccidiosis. It might be the fact that maybe you can get away with some apple cider vinegar, which will change the pH of everything and start the process working okay all the way down and reestablish that that gut microbiota that's needed for birds to digest food. And we also talked about how important it was for boosting their immunity, because about 60% plus of a bird's intestine is loaded with their immune system. So when you see this type of a dropping, my guess is this is where it's going to be basically coming from, the majority of it. The inability of the large intestine, which has probably lost a great degree of the microbiota that it needs to help regulate the immune system, but also helps to regulate the absorption and the drying out process of the manure as it comes through, or the dropping as it comes through. Some of these things that your enteritis is, basically it can be anything. But enteritis is generally caused by a multitude of things, but it's an inflammation of the intestinal lining, and this will increase the bird's thirst, and in that case, increase the diarrhea. And because of the diarrhea, the very loose dropping, we're going to be looking at a bird that's going to start dehydrating. We're going to get those shiny, fluorescent, they're neat-looking droppings, but they're not healthy. See, that's the problem with them. They look good, you know, nice fluorescent green, but they're not healthy by any stretch. So you're going to start the dehydration process, and that's really what that means once you start seeing that fluorescent green dropping. That, you know, like I said before, you know, 24 to 36 hours, you're probably looking at mortality if it hasn't gotten under control. You know, then this is part of the reason then they start losing their appetite. The birds become weak, stand around, and lead you to believe that it might be some other disease that you start treating for, and it's not. So those are some of the things that you need to look for. Now, as far as remedies are concerned, you want to try to pick things that are going to work in the intestine, okay? And it goes back before, we don't have a bird with a snotty nose, so there's no sense picking something that's going to do most of its work in the air sacs and the lungs and the trachea and places like that. Doesn't mean you can't use something like the Oxitet or something like that, but I like to try to get a more broad-spectrum antibiotic. The problem with the Oxitet, basically, is if you're going to feed that and you're collecting eggs for hatching purposes, that's going to be a problem. the neomycin and bacitracin, the BMD bacitracin would be a better bet because they don't migrate out of the gut, and you shouldn't have any problem with consuming the eggs at all during that period of time. Those are, two that you could use. If you need to, you could give it a boost by putting the neomycin, the bacitracin, and the oxitat together as a cocktail. Usually works pretty well. Usually try to do that in a more severe case. Another one that I would try if I had birds that were producing eggs for human consumption, the first thing I would run to would be the oil of oregano and see if you can't stop it with that. Bear in mind that certain types of worms can be causing this problem as well. The increased thirst. Small tip-off for you would be that the gape worm and or the capillary worm especially can cause an increase in thirst. So that you may be looking at something where a bird is consuming a lot more water. We also see birds that have the capillary worms from time to time. It isn't 100%, but it's another little tool in your toolbox, another thing to be thinking about. And we see birds that eat dirt. Okay? They will eat dirt and drink water, eat dirt and drink water. And they have to leave their feed alone, believe it or not. They may go eat a little bit of feed, but they mainly in the dirt and the water. Some birds drinking as much as 12, 16 ounces of water or more a day, but the droppings prove the same thing, too, because the droppings are nothing but water. That is generally, obviously, a gut problem. It could be anything from capillary worms on down. Capillary worms are not going to show up in the droppings as a general rule. They're what's considered a thread worm, and they embed themselves like a piece of thread being threaded through a pair of pants into the lining of the gut and stuff, and they very, very difficult to get out. Very difficult. Things that might work there for that would be ivermectin, given orally, one or two drops maximum right down the throat, or getting some Levisol and mixing that up and putting it into drinking water. Those two generally work pretty well for that type of a situation. Probably the quickest for those two would be. Valbazin would be another one. Might take a little bit longer, but they do work. The problem with all of this stuff is if it were a problem with capillary worms is that the worm becomes anesthetized, and once the wormer wears off, they embed themselves again, so they can be very difficult to get rid of. And on the flip side of that is that if the worm is killed and it's still embedded in the tissue, then it causes an inflammatory reaction, and you get more problems associated with that. So it's important to find out as best you can what's going on in the bird's digestive tract, and find out as much information as you can, and then pick a methodology. But we've also been using the oil of oregano, just a super, super product. Not going to tell you it works for everything, but for the majority of things, it does work. And if it's something that you use on a regular basis, which you would, it can ward off a lot of problems. But the neomycin, bacitracin, oxitet combination, good combination for some of these diarrhea problems. I would start out with possibly the, if you had it on hand, the apple cider vinegar first, see if it stops it. Cheapest and easiest way to do it. If not, I was collecting eggs either for consumption myself or selling, I would probably go with the oil of oregano and put that in the water. It goes in the water real easy, stays in solution, and it's 100% healthy for them. Can't hurt them a bit. All natural, no side effects that I know of. And I've said it here on the show before, my turkey client here, after 20 years of having blackhead, now is blackhead-free in this flock for the first time ever, and not giving off-the-wall medications that are not necessarily good for anybody to try to control it. No crazy worming schedules and putting paper down and putting the birds on top of it, and all costly and time-consuming, labor-intense things. So, all of these things, lend themselves to having healthier birds, and that's what it's all about at the end of the day.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about how the turkeys were doing.
Yeah, doing real well. Yeah, doing real well. One other thing that comes to mind here is that feeding a diet that is high in carbohydrates has a tendency to lead to more loose droppings as well. They don't firm up as well. And this is due to what's called polysaccharides that are in these different types of feedstuffs. And the ability of the bird to digest the proteins and the starches and the fats that are necessary for digestion. So you start to have problems with loose droppings. If you're out there and you don't have a problem, I'm not suggesting that you go and make one. I want to make that perfectly clear. You know, that I don't think that people should run out and do. I see a lot of it on Facebook. Somebody will mention something and somebody runs off, really not even needing the thing but creating a problem. If your droppings are good and your birds are healthy and you don't have a lot of issues, leave it alone. You know, if it isn't broken, don't fix it. Because it'll only cause you more grief and money at the end of the day. So I'm not saying that you need to run out and do anything if the wheel isn't flat. But if it's flat, you need to take a look at it and get past these things. Now one other thing that I want to mention here that throws one little caveat. There's always something, you know. Nothing's ever cut and dried. Problems that that can be associated with an E. coli gut infection, or what we call coli bacillosis. You start looking at some white, a lot of white in the dropping as well. It has an effect, on the kidneys, and you'll see more of a flushing effect there. But it has a tendency to be more congealed and not as loose as some of the other types of droppings would be. Salmonella would be the same way. Salmonella would be more pasty, very thick, sticking to the bird's butt and that kind of thing. So there are some issues there, no question. And those can still lead to what we call enteritis, again, which is an inflammation of the gut. And this is quite common. A lot of this stuff is quite common in a lot of birds. I know people that constantly change feed and everything else, and they constantly have problems and they're unable to figure it out. But if you make changes, you should always make changes very small, very gradual, so that you know where you were and where you are. And if where you are is worse than where you were, you need to go back to where you were. And that's basically the way I would be looking at this particular situation. But we see it. And again, become a poop inspector. It's one of the best tools you'll have in your toolbox. And when you see more cecal tonsil droppings, they're nice and stinky and got a nice, I like to call it butterscotch pudding type color, your bird's digestive system is working pretty well. And if you start to see the excessive moisture, you know you have an issue, and it's time to become an inspector and go looking for it. And if you have trouble, get a hold of me and we'll see what we can do.
That's awesome. Well, great information. And this is, again, it's a topic that I think affects everybody that owns chickens sooner or later.
Yeah.
And like I said before you came on, you need to become, like you always say, a poop inspector. Get that 5-gallon bucket out. Go take a look at your chickens, what they're doing. Like you said, if they free range, go follow them where they go out in the morning and where they're eating and what they're doing and where they're laying and all that kind of stuff. And know them, just like as if they were your kids.
Yeah. I also would like to say this here at this point, because I think this is important for everybody. And I'm not going to name places and this and that and the other thing, because I don't want to inadvertently cause somebody some grief by making a statement that somebody might run with. But there are a number of serious poultry diseases around at this time. Some of them happened a month or so ago in various different states and stuff. There's a lot of stuff running around. There's some LT around, there's some mycoplasma around, running around. I would advise people to be extremely cautious who they buy from, where they buy birds, especially swaps. There's a lot of people who either are unscrupulous or do not understand, poultry diseases. Like I alluded to before, governmental help, they're no help. Because if they were, they wouldn't be telling people some of the silly things they do. They would be reaching out to people and trying to understand how it all works and making people understand how it all works and being supportive and helpful. And just running around telling everybody that biosecurity is not necessarily where it's at. Proper vaccines, properly timed, using the right vaccine. There's problems with laryngotracheitis around. And this is because, again, I've said these types of things before. Sometimes it gets people mad, and I'm sorry if it makes anybody mad, but, things are based on money. You go to a poultry show and somebody's selling an LT vaccine for $10 and another one's for $25, you're going to buy the one for $10, but I can guarantee you the one for $10 is not anywhere close to the one that was being sold for $25.
Uh-huh.
And it's not somebody just trying to gouge, it's the way it is. And the one that's being sold for $10 is the hot strain, it's the one that's responsible for spreading this stuff around most of the time. So everything
another example of that, another example is that, as you talk about, and I can't put my mind on it right now, but you carry the same product, but I guess it's delivered two different ways. One has, it's cheaper, but it has like 0.02 milligrams per, and the other one is a little bit more expensive, but you're getting 10 times as much medicine.
Exactly. Yeah, that would be the Oxytet we were talking about, and the Oxytetracycline, if you want the old Terramycin, 181.4 grams total weight to the bag, 6.4 ounces, about $6 or so. It sounds real good. It sounds cheap. But when you find out there's only 10 grams of oxytetracycline in the bag, and I can turn around and sell you the same thing for about $10, but it has 102.4 grams of oxytetracycline in it, it kind of makes you think like you've been taking just a little bit, and you have. And, because these things don't come with directions on the bag for small flock holders, the person will look at it and say, wow, I got this big bag. Ooh, let me put a teaspoon in here, or a quarter of a teaspoon even. And you might as well throw the whole thing in the garbage because you're not doing anything. There's not enough medication there, especially in a quarter of a teaspoon. But I understand people's logic. They don't want to do any damage either. They're trying to fix something, but the product is weak, and there's no directions for a small flock holder. And there aren't going to be any either. Because in order to do that, they have to go back and in front of the FDA or the USDA, whichever controls it, and have to explain the whole thing with testing and everything else. And for a generic product, it isn't going to happen. Nobody's going to spend millions of dollars to make nothing. It's just not going to be there. So that's all part of the problem. And, again, none of this helps the small flock guy who doesn't understand, because when he reads the bag and it says to put this in 128 gallons of water, when they put out a quart of water a day for their two or three chickens, or they put a gallon out for their 15 or 20 chickens, whichever. So, I run into that all the time, try to solve it the best we can and help folks out. And that's why we, give directions for everything that we sell. There isn't anything that we have that doesn't come with some sort of directions. And obviously, if I should forget to give you directions, all you need to do is email me or call me, and I'll take care of it.
There's a question in the chat room from Chicky. She says that I need to have the spelling of the tablets you said that I needed for my girl with the virulent cocci.
Yeah, it's Albon, A-L-B-O-N. All she needs to do is to email me. I don't have them on the website as of yet.
Okay.
But if she emails me, I will make sure that she gets a few of them.
Okay, I'm putting your email in there, chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com. I just wanted to put that in there for her. So there you go, Chicky. You can send him over an email, chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com.
Yeah, I can give her a few to get going. So until I get them up on a website where people can actually purchase them. But it's a new methodology that we've come up with. It's been tried and it works. you know, it's stopped a few cases of nasty coccidiosis. And like everything else, the quicker you get on it and get on the medication, the quicker, you know, it's no different than treating a human. The quicker you get on any disease that you're dealing with as a human, the greater your chances are of mitigating the problem and taking care of it. Same thing for chickens, even more so on chickens because they don't have a diaphragm like we do to separate their thoracic chest cavity from the body cavity, and so everything kind of touches, and so something starts in one spot can become systemic overnight. And that's why they go downhill quick and die very quickly. One of the reasons, anyway. So, you know, bearing in mind all these things and keeping all these things, you know, in context, that's how it works. So.
Perfect. No, that's good information. Lots of good information pertinent to every chicken owner out there. So I suspect this will be a hot topic and a top archive for everybody to listen to. And the folks in the chat room love you and they appreciate you. And I do, too. And folks, you can hear Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer every single Monday, starting at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you miss any segments in the past, they're all labeled, and at blogtalkradio.com is probably the easiest place, but we're also on iTunes completely for free. And Peter, we hope you have a fabulous week, and we look forward to seeing you next Monday for another great topic here. And I think one of the next topics is going to be Salmonella.
We're going to go revisit some salmonella, and we're going to talk about it both on the human side and the chicken side again, and go a little bit deeper into it, you know, the mechanisms of how it works and so on and so forth, and, you know, why we're seeing it and all that kind of stuff, and we'll go with it from there.
That sounds awesome. Hey, thank you so much, and I hope you have a wonderful week. We'll see you next Monday.
We'll see you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
All righty, thank you very much again for tuning in today. Another great episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. And we hope you'll tune in tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We've got, pardon me, Tracy's coming on with Purple Lotus Oils, all about essential oils tomorrow, how we can use essential oils in our first aid kit. So how cool is that? And that'll be tomorrow. Wednesday, Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Thursday, Poultry Today with Dr. McRae, poultry scientist and professor, PhD. So that'll be Thursday. So we've got a full lineup for you this week. Really getting excited for it. We hope you can stop by every day, Monday through Thursday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to learn more about your backyard flocks from the experts. And, of course, homesteading as well. So until tomorrow at 12, we hope you have a wonderful day. Also, wanted to send a shout-out to Christmas Chick. And be careful what you wish for, Christmas Chick. If we don't find a place / home for the winter, we just may take you up on your offer and come park the RV in your backyard and for the winter, and take advantage of the parks and everything else that's around. I think you said Daytona is about 45 minutes away, so we'll hit a couple of days, head over to the beach. But be careful what you ask for. You may end up having some unwanted guests in your backyard that never leave. Oh, man. Hey, y'all have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. God bless everybody.
Ha ha ha.